Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, how to prevent diabetes with a plant-based diet. Now, it's not just about cutting out sugar and carbs. It's about eating vegetables and whole grains. Who says? Duke University. Plus a lot more on health and healing. And then today, I'm going to take calls, as many as I can, depending upon what the questions are and how long it takes to answer them. And if you would like to call in and share your point of view or a question, our archive number, our voice line number is 862-800-6805, 862-800-6805. To listen to this program live, if you're not at a land-based station or at an internet, you can always use your phone, 641-793-7091. Write that number down. You never know when you're out and about traveling. And all the cab drivers that listen to the show each day, that's how they listen to it. And even some of them put it on speaker so that the people in the car, whether they like it or not, can hear it. 641-793-7091. We're also going to do more today on 5G. I did a full hour last week with Dr. Deborah Davis, and today we're going to do another segment, but from a different perspective. And this, I think, you'll find extremely insightful. And also, I'll be giving you a call to action. We have been sent some information by a person who's involved in this, Deborah Copaid, who was on last week, and she is wanting us to call some legislators, so we got their phone numbers for you. So you can call the legislators and tell them that we should have open hearings, not stacked with pro-industry, pro-vaccine people, pro-5G people, telecom people, but people who know the science and know how deadly 5G will be. I'll give you that information a little later. But as always, we start with the latest on health and healing. So we know that a healthy diet full of nutritious foods can help prevent different diseases and improve your overall well-being. But according to Duke University, a recent study following a plant-based diet can help you lower your type 2 diabetes risk. The study was conducted by researchers from the Charles Swee Hock School of Public Health, as well as Duke Medical School in Singapore, and published in the American Journal of Epidemiology. And they simply looked at what happens when you eat a plant-based diet versus not. And it really lowered your diabetes risk with whole foods plant-based diet. That's good news. Now, yesterday, my voice is just a little strained today because I did nearly a four-hour webinar yesterday, and everything that a person should know about anti-aging or adding positive years to your life, or what takes years off your life, was discussed in detail. You know, I told him at the beginning of the webinar, you got a 16-ounce glass, and I'm going to give you 100 gallons of water in it. So they got a lot of information. For those of you who missed the webinar because we were full, our bandwidth was taken, and I'm sorry that people don't get it on earlier on these, but you can't get in at the end. You can still download it. If you go to prn.fm, it is the most comprehensive, in-depth webinar I've ever done, and to my knowledge, it's ever been done, on showing you, no matter what your current state of health, no matter what diseases you suffer from, maybe you're ideally healthy, and you want to live an extra 20 to 30 years, you can. The science proves it. And I actually cited the actual scientific studies in the universities, so I showed people I was not giving my opinion. So that's very important. I'm very happy with that. It took months and months and months to pull all the science together, and years, a lifetime, of working in the field of anti-aging medicine, because I was the director of anti-aging medicine as a research fellow at the Institute of Applied Biology for over 33 years. So it's something I'm very familiar with. There's no reason you should be suffering. There's just no legitimate reason you should have dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's. We can prevent it, and we can improve it, and we can even reverse it. And there's a lot of good examples of that also. And by the way, we're going to be putting up on our YouTube, but we're getting our own channel, our own platform. We're getting it for Facebook, we're getting it for Google search results, and we're getting it for YouTube. So if they censor us, or if they block us because they don't like something I'm saying on vaccines or some other topic, 5G, you will not be limited in this. And we're going to have that this week. We will be giving you this information. We're going to post this information on PRN.fm as soon as it gets up. I believe we're starting tomorrow. But mind you, we have tens of thousands of articles that we had to move from point A to point B. We have over 600 things on Facebook. And I want to thank the 7 million people downloading our films. And that was just the latest statistic. So who knows what the future is going to be, but we're not going to be blocked. In any case, it's a time for sharing information and acting as a platform for others who have been censored. And just so you know, we sent out an invitation to all the 200-plus platforms that are legitimate, like Truthdig and Tom's Dispatch and Countercurrents, all the ones doing good, legitimate work with great journalists who are honest with integrity and saying, if you find that you've been censored, you can use our platform. So we are getting people coming to our platform because we have the largest progressive platform in the world. We get an awful lot of people. Over 100 million of my own programs have been downloaded. So this is the place to come to because we're not going to lie. We're not going to blink in the face of adversity. In fact, this week I'm doing 2 full hours. 1 hour. It won't be tomorrow because, boy, do I have an interesting guest tomorrow. Whoa. I won't say anything about it. But you won't want to miss tomorrow's show because you've never heard this information. But probably on Wednesday and Thursday or Wednesday and Friday, I'm going to do a classroom on the air. One's on nutrition, but it's more than a classroom on a nutrient. It's about the politics behind it. It's about how we're led to believe that something is healthy when it's actually causing disease, and then how they go about protecting that. And how they go about having endless studies and think tanks and astroturf groups to protect the reputation, how they hire scientists. So you're going to get a real in-depth look at how you've been manipulated, lied to about something that everyone in this audience has used. And then the other one is there's a time when if you've been abused by social media, in this case Wikipedia, as thousands have, and if you're one of the people such as Deepak Chopra or Rupert Sheldrake or Sho Atkinson or Dr. Andrew Wild and so many others, you've been put in what is called a freeze, meaning they've judged you as guilty, they've given you no trial, you have no jury, they are both the accuser and executioner. They judge you and then you're not allowed to change a single thing. And this is all done because of politics. So what do you do? Unfortunately, no one has succeeded. Unfortunately, the government was compromised and played to protect them, much like they did the vaccine makers in 1986 when the idiot who was president indemnified any vaccine maker from any damages that occur because of bad vaccines. That was a political one. By the way, we're doing a story on that. We're actually going to show you the politician who lobbied all of his colleagues to get this passed and then immediately went to work for the very companies that paid him to get this done. That should be the very number one objective right now in the United States, in our legislatures, repeal the Vaccine Indemnification Act of 1986. If we do that, then we have a very realistic chance of putting the vaccine makers on notice. You produce a bad vaccine, you produce a vaccine, you have no studies to prove that they're safe and effective, you're going to be sued into oblivion. That's our only recourse right now. Everything else will fail because they have captured the legislators, and we're going to show that also in this, on that program. So 2 full hours come at you this week to take back your rights and how to fight back at the establishment. A real primer. In any case, the University of California at Riverside came up with an interesting analysis, the awful state of mindset you free yourself from. What do I mean? I mean, according to the University of California at Riverside, an induced feeling of awe, A-W-E, or a state of wonder is the best strategy yet for alleviating the discomfort that comes from uncertain waiting. Let's say you're not aware if you're going to keep your job. You're not aware if you're going to keep a relationship. You're not aware if the diagnosis coming in is going to be good or bad on your blood chemistry. Now, these are excruciating forms of waiting, the period during which one awaits uncertain news, the outcome of which is beyond one's control. It's waiting for news from a biopsy, or whether or not you passed your grades in school. Remember how we all felt going to school and taking our exams? That's distinguished from waiting periods such as when looking for a new job, or when you have at least some control over the outcome. And so they're suggesting, and they published in the Journal of Positive Psychology, that you focus upon meditation. Do some meditation where you're putting in your mind something positive and relaxing and pleasing and beautiful. Something that allows you to feel good so that you're not just waiting in this uncomfortable purgatory. And that sense of awe. Now, what do I suggest? I suggest what could be called an awe induction, according to their study. Watch a video of a sunrise with beautiful music, or sunset. Watch animals playing together, or something unique that they've done that brings you that sense of, oh, look at that. I post animal videos every day because I want people to respect these sentient beings in realizing that they are sacred. They're not for meals. And that we should then look at them differently. If you look at a steak and you don't see anything more than a steak on your plate, it's different than watching a dog go over and give kisses to a cow, and the cow kiss back the dog, and the cow lays down, the dog lays across its neck, and they both sleep there on that big pasture together, and you think, wow, it's that awe moment. We need more awe moments in our lives. So get some of the awe videos and watch them, especially if you're going through a rough time. Okay. King's College London found that eating blueberries improves blood vessel function. Boy, that's important. So those wonderful organic blueberries, those delectable berries that are so versatile in our body, they help the brain, we know that. They help circulation. They help better skin. But according to King's College London, just 200 grams, now remember, 28.35 grams to an ounce, so you're talking about just 6 ounces. That's like a cup of blueberries a day can dramatically improve the health of your cardiovascular system. So that's good for the heart. And that can reduce your risk of heart disease by 20%, just one item a day. That doesn't even include the polyphenols from other fruits or vegetables, does include the omega-3 fatty acids, vitamin C, coenzyme Q10, magnesium, all of which also reduce your risk. This was published in the Journal of Gerontology. So have your blueberries every day. Also, they can lower your blood pressure, big time. And Tufts University Nutrition Research Center found that if you're too low in vitamin K, there's where you need your green vegetables, You can end up having a reduction in mobility, especially if you're older. And older adults don't eat their vegetables, like kale, collard greens. You need to eat watercress. You need the dark greens to get your vitamin K. Now, the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, a very good group, published an article in the peer-reviewed journal Nutrients that, again, a plant-based diet, there's your vegan diet, leads to Crohn's disease remission. How about that? For those of us in the field who are actually practicing using the science, we've already known that for 40 years, but I'm glad they finally got up to it. From Georgia Institute of Technology, poor sleep reduces your memory. So if you want better memory, get a full night's sleep. That's important. And a study finds from the Mayo Clinic that micronutrients, those are your selenium, manganese, if you're deficient, it can contribute to celiac disease. So make sure you're getting a full spectrum of a nice quality vitamin minerals. And if you have diabetic retinopathy, which a lot of people do who have diabetes, take extra vitamin B6. I'm suggesting 100 milligrams. And for University of Queensland, which is in Australia, they found that a fraction of the cannabinoid complex, this is called cannabidinol, that's cannabidiol, again, it's still part of the same complex, is a powerful new antibiotic, can help kill off bacteria. It devastated, killed out the serious infection Staphylococcus aureus and Streptococcus. Streptococcus also was knocked out. And this was presented at the American Society of Microbiology. So another non-psychoactive chemical, which is the cannabidiol, can, from the hemp plant, which we should be growing instead of corn and soybeans, that would rejuvenate American farms everywhere. But my suggestion is that American farms in the Midwest, start your transition. Your days are all over. They're gone. What you're seeing right now, with up to 90% of your farms inundated in water for months, the crops you did grow are dead, and the seeds you didn't plant until this dried up, it's too late. It'll be too late in the fall to get a crop. So you've lost a whole season. We're not talking about 100 or 1,000, even 100,000. Farmers, and we're talking about millions of acres cumulatively. This is the new norm. How often can you withstand this when you have mortgage payments, you have equipment payments, you have interest on all this, and you have no income? You only have losses. Time to change the paradigm. It's over. Like living in Miami in the east coast of Florida, it's over. It's sinking, and the water's rising. California, it's over, California, it's over. Your politicians, who are mainly dishonest, opportunists, many of them sociopathic, they're never going to be honest with you, especially the governors. Because if they were honest and told you that at least three-fourths of the state is not sustainable for water, for drought, for fires, and for earthquakes, and they had multiple minor earthquakes just this last weekend, and too many people overly congested, and it's time to look for other places where you still have the opportunity to do that. I'm not asking people to do a mad rush, but I'm saying that it's not sustainable for the future. And I'm not talking about 50 years, 30 years, I'm talking about the next 2 or 3 years. You're going to see some really bad environmental events happening. How do I know that? Am I guessing? No. I've just completed the most comprehensive film ever done on the environment, anywhere in the world, by any filmmaker. You'll see everything about the environment in here, not just global warming. And you'll have an explanation. In fact, all this week, I'm writing the voiceovers. Now, normally I do 5 or 10 voiceovers. The entire film has to be a narrative because it's so complex. You need a narrative to explain to people why where you've lived your whole life without a problem, like in North Carolina, in Louisiana, in Mississippi. You were flooded in Louisiana and Mississippi, in the northern part of the state where you didn't have flood insurance. 53,000 homes were damaged, many of them completely, and you had no flood insurance at all. Where you're in a working-class neighborhood, so you don't have much savings, how are you supposed to come up with $20,000 to get rid of the mold that's in your house? You don't have it. You're going to live in a molded house and end up suffering from pulmonary conditions? No. The government's not going to help you. The insurance companies are not meant to help you. So you're on your own. All I'm doing is telling you, don't trust the people that historically would have helped you, did help you, or could, because they're not going to do it in the future. You're in the wrong place going forward. And all the experts I've interviewed agree with that. Tomorrow, I'm going to do a little information segment on why did they all get it wrong. And I'm going to read you every one of the major headlines from newspapers and media around the world where they all say the same thing. Well, we didn't know. We didn't know. You know, we didn't know. They could have known. They chose the wrong people to quote. So we're showing you why were they all wrong in underestimating how quickly global warming is occurring and the consequences of it. Do you know that the fourth largest city in India, the fourth largest city, has no water as of today? Not just temporary, forever. They're gone. What are you supposed to do with 5 million people living that are under census? You probably have the same amount, not as super poor, who are living off the grid without census. What are you supposed to do with millions of people who don't have water to drink and they're getting government tankers coming in and they go up and they're drinking very polluted water and getting sick? Didn't anyone see it coming? Didn't they plan for it? Didn't they have a plan B? No. And that's true everywhere in the world, every country in the world. You think they're doing something good? Some countries are making some effort. America is making no effort, zero, not at all, on any level, period. In fact, we're contributing to even more global warming, and I'll get with that later on. This is in my mind because I'm writing the script all this week as the narrative that goes over it. All the film is done. Really looks beautiful. But you're not going to come out of this film feeling good about life or yourself or the government or anything. And the biggest challenge I had was, do I give hope at the end or not? And then I realized if I was honest, I couldn't give hope because there is none. There's only hope that the individuals will wake up and do something for themselves or in small groups. But that's it. Everyone else is royally screwed. That's what hubris does for you. More on that when I premiere the film later in the summer, early fall. Now, we're going to take a break. You've got the latest on health and healing. All good news there. And now we're going to, let's see, I'm looking at the call. We'll take a few of your calls. I want to give everything to this 5G report. So we'll go to a break and then right into your messages.
My question is, what could I do with the new vaccination? Religious exemption is no longer valid in the public schools of New York City. What could I do now that I might have to have my children vaccinated?
Hold off for the moment. What we're doing now is lawsuits. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and at least 4 other lawyers, and I'm using my lawyers we're suing. We're suing New York to show that this was unconstitutional. It violates certain laws, constitutional guarantees, and we're going to get it into the court system. If we get it into the court system, if it's not dismissed, we will win because they have no law and science on their side. They only have the power of politics, talking points, and corruption of government officials willing to lie on their behalf. We will prove that, and we will nail them. I will be one of the people giving expert testimony, and I'll also be writing up the questions to challenge them because I know all of the people they're going to bring, the same cast of characters, the Paul Offits, and we will be prepared. In fact, tomorrow I'm doing a program on Paul Offit on our program. So hold fast. Don't overreact. Don't panic, because we do still have some legal challenges, and that's where this will be won or lost. Take another quick call.
Yes. This is Diane from the Bronx. I just celebrated my 70th birthday, and I am concerned. I seem to have difficulty holding on to weight. What do you do with that?
Okay, you do three things. First, the fact that you're 70 shouldn't be what's important. What is important is stop acting your age. We have a whole fetish in the United States that at a certain age we start to have to slow down and act our age. No, you should speed up and not act your age. There's no reason at 70 that you shouldn't be highly active with your body, meaning you should be exercising. You should be power walking every day fast as you can for at least 45 minutes to an hour. You should be lifting weights, because when you lift weights or resistance exercises in your gym, you are expanding protoplasm. And by taking the branched chain amino acids, the branched chain amino acids, you can buy them in any drugstore, health food store, right after a workout, you're then getting more of the muscle tissue in there. Also take D-ribose and take, I would also, yeah, just D-ribose for now. Those would be the two I would use. And then take a good quality plant-based protein powder after your exercise, about 20 minutes after your exercise. Have a little smoothie with about 20 grams of protein, and that is going to help give you more muscle. And then take some avocados and almonds and olives and olive oil, a whole spectrum of the nuts and whole grains and sweet potatoes and potatoes. Start eating healthy foods. Do not eat foods that are high in calories. That's the mistake people make who are underweight or cachexic. Instead, eat nutritious foods that rebuild cells or give you the proper amount of body fat, because you really want to maintain your body fat but have more lean muscle, because it gives you strength, dexterity, and that's what you need. All right? That's all we have time for today for those two. I'm looking at the clock, and let's do this. I want to play a 5G segment and hopefully have a few minutes left at the end so that people can call in and make their statements. But I want to share something that was sent to me this morning from Deborah Copald, C-O-P-A-L-D, C-O-P-A-L-D, Copald. And Deborah has been a vigorous fighter, nonstop, every day. She's totally committed to helping the public understand the dangers of cell phones and Wi-Fi and putting them in schools and all the things we've done, thinking these were safe. And she suggested that we give people the phone numbers of the people in power so we can reach out and speak to them. And she also says that we should ask Senator Schumer and Pulaski to also reach out to Pallone and Doyle at House Commerce Subcommittees on Telecom regarding having health hearings on 5G. And Schumer's considering sending them a letter, but we need, knowing he is such a political animal, we need to say, no, We want hearings, and we want to be able to bring our medical scientists, experts in, and we have a panel of 20. And these are heavyweight MD scientists, MD PhDs frequently, that will be on a panel for the people, not the, you know, otherwise the whole panel will be stacked, as it always is, with pro-industry groups. Now, I'm going to give you some phone numbers. Please write these down. First, Chuck Schumer. He's head of the Senate. Number 202-224-6542. Again, 202-224-6542. Be polite but firm. We reject 5G until there are public hearings where independent non-telecom experts are allowed to testify to show the 10,000 articles in the peer-reviewed scientific literature of the adverse effects of 5G, 4G, 3G, 2G, cell phones, etc. And we want him to make sure there are hearings where the people's representatives, not the industries, have a chance to testify. And again, be polite or they'll just hang up on you. Nancy Pelosi, 202-225-4965. Again, 202-225-4965. And again, politely. Remember, diplomacy is much more likely to have someone pay attention to you than adamancy. So stridency and anger doesn't work. It works against us. 202-225-4965, same message. Then Mike Doyle. Doyle is the Communications Technology Subcommittee Chair of the House Commerce Committee. His phone number, 202-225-3084. Again, 202-225-3084. And finally, Frank Pallone. It's either Pallone or Pallone. House Committee, Commerce Committee Chair. 202-225-4671. Again, Frank Pallone, P-A-L-L-O-N-E, 202-225-4671. Now that's four people, four of the most powerful people in Congress who can help we the people have hearings where everything's under oath, where we can present experts. We have all the experts lined up. These are all independent, non-affiliated. They have no conflict of interest, and they have all the science on their side. Okay, now we're going to go directly into an audio video clip. I'm not sure you can watch this, but you can certainly hear it. And this is from the Colbert Report. And this is one of the best examples of quality information you'll ever hear on 5G. We'll go to the tape.
Experience at home and across industries as we connect virtually everything. By 2020, analysts estimate that there will be more than 20 billion installed IoT devices around the world, generating massive amounts of data. With access to this kind of information, industries of all kinds will be able to reach new levels of efficiency as they add products, services, and capabilities.
As you may have heard by now, telecom companies are currently scrambling to implement fifth-generation cellular network technology. Dubbed 5G, these networks will make use of millimeter-length electromagnetic waves, also dubbed extremely high-frequency or EHF radiation, to transmit information faster than ever before. 5G networks promise to deliver data 100 times faster than the existing 4G networks and reduce latency as much as 98%. The promise of 5G was promoted by Tom Wheeler, then chair of the Federal Communications Commission, when he made a presentation on the U.S. government's vision for the rollout of 5G in America in 2017.
Yes, 5G will connect the Internet of Everything. If something can be connected, it will be connected in a 5G world. But with the predictions of hundreds of billions of microchips connected in products from pill bottles to plant waterers, you can be sure of only one thing. The biggest Internet of Things application has yet to be imagined. Here's the key. The interconnected world that we live in today is the result of decisions made a decade ago. The interconnected world of the future will be the result of decisions we must make today. And that is why 5G is a national priority.
But after the initial surge of hype that surrounds any new technology, the dark reality of this new 5G-connected Internet of Things is starting to come to light. The most immediately apparent aspect of this dark reality is the danger to human health that the 5G network's ubiquitous and powerful transmitters present. As an increasing body of research shows, the harmful effects of electromagnetic radiation present in current mobile technologies will be amplified by orders of magnitude in the much more powerful and much denser, extremely high-frequency radiation network that 5G relies on. As retired U.S. government career scientist Dr. Ronald M. Powell noted in his comment to the FCC on the proposed 5G rollout, this technology must be opposed because it would greatly extend FCC's current policy of the mandatory irradiation of the public without adequate prior study of the potential health impact and assurance of safety. It would irradiate everyone, including the most vulnerable to harm from radio frequency radiation, pregnant women, unborn children, young children, teenagers, men of reproductive age, the elderly, the disabled, and the chronically ill. But another, even more neglected aspect of the 5G dark reality is that in a world where all objects are wired and constantly communicating data to one another through a 5G network, an Internet of Things, in other words, privacy and security would be next to impossible. Even the mainstream is now admitting that the unprecedented amounts of data flowing through the 5G network, from appliance usage to personal communications to transaction information, is a treasure trove that, if it were to fall into the wrong hands, would be a formidable weapon.
Huawei wants to become a major player in 5G outside of China, but it's facing pressure internationally because of cybersecurity concerns dogging the company. The U.S. is urging its allies to block Huawei from 5G projects in their countries.
Maron says China is using mobile technology as a tool for spying, and he's seen the evidence.
They are actually using it for massive surveillance against their own population. We looked on the Huawei equipment to the level of every single chip there, and what we found is not very pleasant. This is not a commercial company stuff. This is a kind of nearly a military-grade stuff.
We have China coming in with their 5G network. All of the things that it's like we're living in 1956, and they're not. And they don't care about rights. They don't care about people.
The implication of these mainstream pundits' pontifications is that 5G only represents a threat in the hands of the Russians or the Chinese or other supposed enemies of America. But what about the companies that are manufacturing these products? Why are the big tech giants, who have so signally abused the public's misplaced trust for decades, now to be trusted with creating big databases of sensitive personal information on every imaginable aspect of our daily lives? And why is the government of the U.S. and its allies around the globe, governments that have been caught time and again illegally spying on their own populations and violently suppressing dissent, suddenly to be trusted as stewards of such a system? The truth is that the development of 5G networks and the various networked products that they will give rise to in the global smart city infrastructure represents the greatest threat to freedom in the history of humanity. This is the 5G Dragnet. You're tuned into the Corbett Report. The vision of the future offered by the proponents of this next-generation cellular technology is one in which every object that you own will be a smart object, communicating data about you, your movements, and your activities in real time via the ultra-fast 5G network. From the grandiose, self-driving cars and remote surgery, to the mundane, garbage cans that let garbage trucks know when they're full. Everything around us will be constantly broadcasting information through the Internet of Things if the 5G boosters get their way. But beyond the glossy sci-fi fantasy presented in the slick advertisements for this smart world of the future is a creepy and unsettling glimpse into a technological dystopia. One in which social experiences are shared by strapping VR goggles to your face, and interaction with humans is reduced as much as possible in favor of interaction with machines, gadgets, and personal assistants that are there to cater to your every whim, for a price. And, as some are only now starting to realize, the price that one pays for this world of robotic comfort and convenience is control. Control over our data, control over our security, and control over our lives.
We just hooked up the Nest maybe a month ago.
Abby Laguidao and Conrado Casalo wanted something to keep their family safe. So they installed Nest, a smart home security camera system.
What drives me crazy is yesterday was the only day I decided to stay home. He's always here. They never said anything, ever.
Yesterday, Abby was alone with her two kids when she started hearing voices coming from their Nest.
Then they started cussing and saying, "Shut the F up, you N-word."
At that point, Abby had figured out that someone had hacked into their security system.
Shut the f*** up.
She called her partner, Conrado.
Somebody is in the Nest and is watching us and is talking to us right now.
I think within 5 years, most people will have at least...
That is something out of a horror movie right there.
Man, right. Can you imagine it?
Like, we knew something was going to go on? That scared...
That's
the terror of me.
That was a real jump. Yeah.
And we're going to go ahead and unlock the door, her back door.
Oh.
I think that was your lock.
That was our lock.
Let's go look. Come on.
And that isn't any laughing matter.
See, but that's the real fear, right?
That.
You know, the other stuff's kind of funny, whatever. But, I mean, someone can unlock your house.
Although, if someone really wants to get into your house, you can pick a lock.
Yeah, but isn't that the modern day... There it goes again. I mean, isn't that the modern-day lockpick? There's a guy outside with a laptop who's opening and closing your door lock.
It is, and I don't like it.
After their stunt on the highway, Chris and Charlie still wanted to show me a couple of other tricks. Below a certain speed, they can control the Jeep steering as long as it's in reverse, pop its locks, mess with the speedometer, and, of course, disable the brakes.
Okay, hold on tight. Hold on.
Oh, he's not getting out of that.
I don't
think so. We're going to be doing some pushing.
It isn't hard to see why these smart technologies, and the 5G network that enables them, are a security concern. And, in that context, it isn't hard to see why Chinese companies like Huawei and ZTE are now being targeted as potential national security threats and barred from developing 5G network infrastructure in country after country. After all, with access to that much data and information, let alone the ability to communicate with, hack into, or disable everything from our smart TV to our smart door locks to our smart car, a potential adversary with control of the 5G network would have nearly limitless power to surveil and control a target population. But given that these powers, the ability to access our most intimate data and to take control of our homes and personal appliances, are not bugs, but features of the 5G-connected Internet of Things, the question is, why is there such a headlong rush to connect this network? Is demand for smart dishwashers and smart toothbrushes and smart baby monitors really so overwhelming that it requires us to put the security of our homes, our possessions, and our families at risk? What is really driving this frenzy for a world where every new object we buy presents another potential vulnerability, another device that can be hacked into to steal our information, to track our location, to record our conversations, and to disable our appliances? One answer to this question lies in the fact that intelligence agencies, whether Chinese or Russian, CIA or MI6, Mossad or CSIS, will make use of the vast amounts of data flowing through these networks to spy on the public. In fact, the members of the so-called intelligence community do not even hide this fact. They openly gloat about it. In 2012, then-CIA Director David Petraeus admitted at a summit hosted by Incutel, the CIA's venture capital firm, that the CIA was not just able to, but actually eager to use these smart devices as a tool for spying. Transformational is an overused word, but I do believe it properly applies to these technologies, Petraeus was quoted as saying, particularly to their effect on clandestine tradecraft. Items of interest will be located, identified, monitored, and remotely controlled through technologies such as radio frequency identification, sensor networks, tiny embedded servers, and energy harvesters, all connected to the next generation internet using abundant, low-cost, and high-power computing. Lest there be any doubt about the intelligence community's intentions to use these devices to spy on the population, then-Director of National Intelligence James Clapper confirmed this approach in a report to the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence in 2016. Smart devices incorporated into the electric grid, vehicles, including autonomous vehicles, and household appliances are improving efficiency, energy conservation, and convenience. However, security industry analysts have demonstrated that many of these new systems can threaten data privacy, data integrity, or continuity of services. In the future, intelligence services might use the IoT for identification, surveillance, monitoring, location tracking, and targeting for recruitment, or to gain access to networks or user credentials. Whistleblowers from within the intelligence establishment, whistleblowers like Russ Tice and Bill Binney, who are actively shunned by the same mainstream media that breathlessly reported on Edward Snowden, have already laid out in exhaustive detail how the NSA is collecting all data flowing through the internet as we know it. Every phone call, every email, every web search, every file stored to the cloud, everything that passes from one computer or phone to another is being stored, cataloged, databased, and data mined to construct detailed profiles of ordinary citizens. But now that the 5G network is promising to deliver us not an internet of phones and computers, but an internet of things, from cars and watches to fridges and hats to milk jugs and floor tiles, when every manufactured object is broadcasting information about you and your activities to the world at large by default, and when it is discovered that opting out of this surveillance grid is not an option, the true nature of the 5G panopticon will finally begin to dawn on the public. But by that point, it will already be too late.
Cities use data every day. Everything from showing you when your next train will arrive to measuring the air quality in different neighborhoods. Typically, all this information is spread out across a ton of different agencies and companies in a bunch of different file formats and spreadsheets. But at Keyside, we have the chance to start from scratch and build a single, unified digital platform that's transparent, open, and accessible for everyone working to make our cities better.
The leaders behind Toronto's first data-driven smart city are under fire tonight after yet another resignation. This time, a member of Waterfront Toronto's digital advisory panel quit and wrote a strongly worded letter on her way out, sharing her deep concerns about privacy and data control.
I want to get some feedback now from the former Information and Privacy Commissioner from the province of Ontario, who, when last you were here discussing this very topic, you were kind of bullish about it. And then I just couldn't happen but help notice that you've resigned from your involvement in all this. What happened?
And I didn't do it lightly. I wanted to draw attention to the fact that we had to make sure that all the personal data that was being collected automatically by the sensors and other technologies were de-identified at source, anonymized at source.
De-identified meaning?
Meaning no personal identifiers. You wouldn't know it's Ann Cavoukian walking or you this is my car or anything. And the reason that was critical is, unlike most uses of what I call operational data, where the individual, the data subject, can exercise some control over the use, the operation of that data. They can consent to it, they can revoke consent, they can choose not to consent. They have some sense of control. With the data here, you have no control. It's all being collected automatically with the emerging technology, sensors, all picking up data.
But it is not just the intelligence agencies or the big tech conglomerates who are set to profit from the creation of this newer, stickier World Wide Web. In fact, the 5G-enabled Internet of Things is a necessary part of the creation of the system of total control, physical, financial, and political, that the technocrats have been lusting over for a century now. As viewers of Why Big Oil Conquered the World will know by now, the technocrats are adherents to an ideology dubbed technocracy, which holds that all modern-day problems, be they social, economic, or political, can be solved by the scientific engineering of society. In the technocrats' vision, teams of engineers, scientists, economists, and other specialists, if given access to enough data about the world around them, could scientifically balance production and consumption such that inflation, recession, geopolitical conflict, and other sources of strife will be eliminated forever. As the co-founder of Technocracy Inc., M. King Hubbert, laid out in the group's founding document, the Technocracy Study Course, the amount of data needed to bring this techno-utopian vision to reality is truly mind-boggling. In the Technocracy Study Course, Hubbert, like a good technocrat, laid out the exact conditions that would need to be met for this vision to come to pass. According to him, technocracy would require all energy usage and all consumer spending throughout the nation to be calculated and registered on a continuous and instantaneous basis, a 24/7 inventory of all production and consumption, a complete registry of all products available for sale, where they were produced, how much energy was expended in their production, and where and when they were sold, and finally, a specific registration of the consumption of each individual, plus a record and description of the individual. Hubbert's vision was not just that of a totalitarian society in which every detail of every interaction was recorded and reported to a central authority, but, for the 1930s, the concept of continuously and instantaneously updated registries of every good in the economy was not just audacious, but borderline insane. As unimaginable as a real-time database keeping track of every transaction and every manufactured product in the economy was in the 1930s, that is exactly the world we are looking at as smart meters collect information on smart appliances connected to other smart objects through the Internet of Things. And, crucially, the sheer amount of data being generated in this smart grid and the constant real-time communication required to keep the system functioning would be impossible without the 5G network. 5G is not just a neutral mobile network. It is the backbone for a system of total surveillance which has been written about and worked toward for the better part of a century. The world of the technocrats, the world of the smart grid, and the world of constant real-time surveillance of everything would not be possible without the 5G network that is being installed right now. And, as Josh Del Sol of the Take Back Your Power movement that is organizing resistance to smart meters, 5G networks, and other harmful technologies explains, the world of the technocrats is a world where privacy is a thing of the past.
So with the smart meters, they'll be able to tell exactly what's going on in your home at any, down to the microsecond, based upon 24/7 communication with all of your appliances, which will also in the future, if this goes through fully and if there's not a public backlash, all of your appliances will need to have a wireless transmitter on them, and they'll need to be, you know, certified under some smart, you know, program. So this means that not only just stepping aside from one moment to the health issue, this means that not only is your smart meter emitting on average of 13,000 microwave pulses per day, but every one of your appliances is going to be doing the same thing because it will be needed to be communicating with the smart meter itself. So that is a serious concern. We'll get into that a little bit later. But as far as the privacy issue, just diving right in. March of this year, Wired Magazine, the current CIA director, David Petraeus, was quoted as saying, we're going to use smart appliances to spy on you. And it's almost like, and he was later on down in the article, and it's very just putting it out there. It's kind of like, it's getting to a point now, James, and I'm sure you're seeing this, is like, it's just getting more and more in your face. And it's kind of like this collective force of the controllers, and they're kind of saying, this is what we're going to do, and what are you going to do about it?
It should be clear by this point that the vision of the technocrats is in fact a nightmare for free humanity. It must be resisted every step of the way, and the battle over the 5G network rollout will be the front lines of this battle in the next few years. Thankfully, resistance is forming as the public is increasingly becoming aware of the health risks of 5G. Over 180 scientists and doctors from 36 countries have submitted a formal appeal to the European Union, warning of the potential serious health risks of 5G. City officials in Portland, Oregon are suing the federal government to stop 5G transmitters from being installed on city property, with counselors considering asking the federal government to study the health impacts of 5G on humans and make that information publicly available. This past March, Florence City Council invoked the precautionary principle when passing a motion that halts permission for 5G installation until a proper demonstration of the technology's safety. The Russian Defense Ministry has refused to transfer frequencies for 5G operation, effectively delaying 5G rollout in the country for years. Plans to deploy a 5G network in Brussels were halted earlier this year because, according to Environment Minister Céline Frémont, the people of Brussels are not guinea pigs whose health I can sell at a profit. It is heartening to see that the health effects of the extremely high-frequency radiation emitted by 5G transmitters is finally starting to break through to the public consciousness. But if we concentrate solely on the health effects of 5G, we risk falling into a trap.
And there's still five more minutes you can watch by going to purion.fm, and you can download that show. We will be doing more programs that take you beyond the actual technology. You see, this is a story far deeper and far more problematic than just the health effects, which are devastating because every single human being on the planet will be affected. I predict that when this rolls out completely, when there are 20,000 satellites in the sky, and that will be happening, and when every single building in every single town will have not only a tower, 5G tower, but then all of your appliances inside will be wireless. Refrigerators, television. The televisions right now all have... go over right now to your TV. You see that black frame? Very gently run your finger across the top of it in the middle. Suddenly you find a little indentation. That's a camera. It is recording all video and audio. What if that's in your bedroom? Everything you're doing, they're recording. They're cataloging. And they're profiling. Every thought you have, every private conversation you have, everything you have when you have friends over for a casual dinner, the things you would say when the public is not there, the jokes, your actual thoughts, they're recording all of it. And yet, that doesn't seem to be concerning us. Just the health effects affect us. And I'm very concerned at where the Silicon Valley, the titans of industry, the oligarchs supporting Silicon Valley. Remember, Silicon Valley is not owned by the people in Silicon Valley. Silicon Valley is owned by very wealthy multi-billionaires who invest in all of the different companies. And these are the people who are the leading stockholders and therefore policymakers. They're the ones who select who's going to run the country, company, what its policies are going to be. So you see, this is creeping totalitarianism. And we need to challenge it. We, in our own limited way, will be on a regular basis. Thank you all for listening. Make the calls to your legislators. Let's have the open hearings where the truth will come out. I'm Gary Nall. Have a nice day, everyone.